we are going to, of course, we have seen that gravity is a gauge system. So first, we're going to focus on how to quantize a gauge system. And I'm first going to focus on a quite simple, it's the simplest example of a gauge system is a parametrized particle. And this system is quite interesting because in this system, you can perform the three different quantizations. So meaning the reduced phase space quantization, the Dirac quantization, which is going to be the one we're going to focus on in the case of gravity, and also the path integral quantization. So with this example, I'm going to, so as I said, I'm sorry, I was thinking you would have talked about that during the tutorial on Friday, but finally you, it seems that you already have seen this example a long time ago, so hopefully it's not too old for you. And so I'm going to recall you what are the main characteristics of this parametrized particle system and take this example to introduce the notion of observable. I didn't really have time to talk about that on last week, so I'm going to spend some time on the notion of observable. And then we will go to the Dirac quantization, which is the quantization we're going to focus on in the case of gravity. Okay, so we have seen that for the phase space description for system with gauge symmetry leads to constraint. So when you have gauge system, gauge symmetry, then so this was what we've seen when you talk about the phase space. So we have to make the distinction between what we call the kinematical phase space. Okay, so distinction. And what we call the physical phase space or reduced phase space. Okay. Or reduce phase space. And so when you talk about canonical quantization, so what you want to do is to turn some of this phase space function as operator. And so usually, if it's possible, what is would be the easiest thing would be to start from the physical phase space and then try to quantize. But the issue is that we will see that most of the time, this phase space can be quite complicated. You remember that at some point you have to quotient with the by the gauge symmetry. So this means that sometimes even this what you get is not a manifold. Okay, so yeah, it's in most of the cases, at least in the case we are going to be interested in, we don't have access to this, and we don't even have access to this physical phase space even at the classical level. And so usually we are going to start with the kinematical phase space, and then do what is called the Dirac quantization. So I'm going to explain what are the different steps of this Dirac quantization, but this means that so the constraints are going to be transformed into operator, and we are going to try to implement this constraint at the kinematical level. Okay? So let's start with the example of the parametrized particle. And so we're going to consider a free non-relativistic particle. So it's a very because in fact, even for already the relativistic particle, we will see that we have some there are some difficulties. So in a one-dimensional space, so the action is just going to be an action of depending on the position, and you get that it's dt. So this is quite simple. This gives you the position of the particle. And so if now you evaluate this action on its extremal points, okay, which are then you get the evolution, the time evolution of an observable, which is just the position of your particle. And you get q plus p. Well, here I have chosen this, so I have two initial conditions. Okay, so here we don't have any symmetries, so there is no constraint, and you just get this evolution. But so you know that in non-relativistic physics, so usually we assume that the time parameter, okay, is correspond to some external clock, as here, okay? And there is no, this clock is not influenced by the dynamics of your system. So it's like the case we just described here. But you also know that in GR, due to the background independence, there is no preferred notion of time. Okay, so we cannot have this kind of external clock, which is not going to be affected by the dynamics. So to mimic this feature of background independence here, I'm going to reformulate this non-relativistic particle case in introducing a new parameter, okay, which is not going to be physical, of course, but then it's going to allow us to mimic the case of general relativity. So an unphysical parameter S. And so the idea is now to rewrite your particle system. So T now is going to be considered as also a variable which depends on an external parameter S. Okay, so here S in fact can just be thought as a curvilinear parameter. Okay, so you have a particle here, Q, T, and now you describe this path as Q of S, T of S. And so now your new action in terms of this variable is going to be given by, so here the dot was for the derivative with respect to T, and now I'm going to use this new notation, square divided by. So where here, this means the derivation with respect to the S variable, okay? And so where here, I just use the chain rule to get that Q dot, which was dQ over dT, can be in fact written as Q dQ over dS. Okay, and so I think during the tutorial you did, so maybe it was in September or something, yeah. So quite a long time ago. Maybe you don't have any clue. What, so do you remember about this system or a bit? Okay, so I think I'm not going to do it, but you can redo it. One of the questions was for you to check that indeed this action was invariant under reparametrization of. So you can check that it's invariant under reparametrization. So just if you, from F, you define S tilde, where F here is just a smooth function. And so here we have, means that we have a gauge symmetry, okay? Which is so reparametrization invariant. Okay, and so in particular, this means that if QSTS is a solution, then any reparametrized particle will be Q of F of S, Q of T of S. T of F of S will be also a solution, okay? Okay, so now let's do the canonical analysis and go to the Hamiltonian picture, okay? To see, so what are you expecting here? We have now a gauge symmetry, so in the canonical analysis, so in the Hamiltonian picture, you expect to get a constraint, okay? Okay, so let's check this. So we can define the momentum associated to the T variable here. So we get is just given by minus Q tilde dot. Okay, and yeah, maybe one half is missing. The action, and we get that the momentum conjugate to the Q variable is just the usual one. But written in terms of the s variable, it's given by this. But you see that we have that this number is exactly q dot. OK, so from here, you see that we have a constraint. OK, these two momentum are not independent, so we have a constraint, which is c is equal to pt plus pq square divided by and so if now we look at the Hamiltonian of the system, what we are going to get is that this Hamiltonian is just proportional to this constraint. Okay, so we are going to get, as in gravity, a totally constrained system. Okay, so this is going to be very similar to what we have. So the Hamiltonian is just given by, in terms of this new variable, so it's pt t prime plus pq q prime minus our Lagrangian we started with, and you can do the calculation to show that this is exactly t prime times c, our constraint. Okay, so we have a totally constrained system. Okay, and here the t prime can be considered as a Lagrange multiplier. Okay, so we can rewrite h as n of s, which is our Lagrange multiplier. So here it will be equivalent to the Laplace function times c. Of course, so h is equal to 0, as in, but again, it still generates a flow. Okay, so we can have a look to the flow generated by h on our phase space function. And okay, so we have the flow rated by H. So we just get that, which is Q with H, is just given by N PQ M, and we get that is just given by the Lagrange multiplier. And quickly, we get that the evolution of the momentum momenta are equal to 0, so we get pq h okay, so at this point you can be maybe a bit confused, because indeed here you will see that, so if you take two different values of n, this means that you consider two different s and s prime, then you get two different solutions, q of s and q of s prime, okay? So, but I think, so during this tutorial, you already had to think about what are the good questions you can ask in this kind of, when you have this kind of system, because you see that here, if you're just asking what is the value of q of s when s is a given value, then if one of your friends is looking at the same system but with a different clock, okay? So this means that he will have q of s prime, then he also want to answer the question, what is the value of q of s prime when s prime is equal to the same value here? Then of course you are not going to agree on your physical on the physical prediction here. But so what are the kind of questions you should ask here? Do you remember, or you have an idea from here?
What combinations of Q and T can you find?
Sorry?
What combinations of Q and T can you find?
Yeah, okay, so this means that it's kind of relational question, okay? This means that you want to compare Q, you want to know the value of Q when T of S is equal to, so T is also a dynamical variable here, when Q, T of S will be equal to a given number. And then this can be compared, okay, with T of S prime of being the same number. So here this means that this is really important in this kind of totally constrained system. The kind of question you want to ask are what we call the relational questions. Okay, and so for example, in gravity, it's also very natural because, so if you think about, if you want to consider the universe, so it's the question people are, the system people are considering when they are doing cosmology, okay, they consider the universe. So the universe is everything. But so this means that when you want to construct a clock to study, then you have to look at this, also the evolution of your clock with as a portion of the universe. Okay, so this means that usually the type of question you want to ask in gravity is what is some portion of the universe doing when the portion we use to define the clock measure, for example, the year, I don't know, 1983. Okay, so this means that you have to consider when you measure something, you have to consider with respect to a given clock, which is also a portion of the universe. Okay, so this was just to come back on this idea that you don't really see here that you have an evolution, but don't forget, in addition for this system, you know that at some point we should recover this unparametrized particle, which is a very simple system. But you see that when you add this new parameter here, things seem to be a bit confusing, but it's just because you have to think differently, okay? So since you have this additional parameter. Okay, so very good. So now I want to, so let's check that indeed we still have the same degrees of freedom. Okay, so so for the unparametrized particle, so the first action I wrote here, S of Q, when you were dealing with the phase space, so your phase space was just defined by Q and P, okay? So it's two dimensions for your phase space. And so here now in the extended phase space, we have QT and PQ and PT, okay? So we have four dimensions. But so let's check that indeed we still have the two physical dimensions because here we have many gauge degree. Yeah.
Sorry, how is N of S in that equation, right? H is equal to N of S of psi.
Sorry, what is?
N of S in the board above.
Yeah.
In the equation for the Hamiltonian.
Yeah, so it just because, so here T prime can be considered the Lagrange multiplier, so then I just called here T prime as Lagrange multiplier N, which is what usually we call the Laplace, okay, function. And it's, yeah, of course, it's a function of S. It's just, I change the name. Okay, so here we have what we call the kinematical phase space here is four dimension, okay? But we have one constraint, and so one degree of freedom is going to be lost by implementing this constraint. And then another one is going to be lost by identifying the one-dimensional gauge orbit to physical equivalent state. Okay, so then we have also to divide by the gauge orbit. So it's 4 minus 2, and we recover the 2. Okay, so it's okay. And so this means that here, even if it's not quite obvious, since it's a 2D physical phase space, this means that, so it's at this point that the notion of observable is quite important. So this means that we can describe this 2D physical phase space by two independent, what we call Dirac observable. Okay? So this means that we want to describe it with two independent Dirac observable, or if you want, it's gauge invariant observable. And so a Dirac observable, since it's a gauge invariant object, what is going to be the definition? Do you have an idea here of this? Let's call it F here. Well, I know that F is, it's not obvious why it's F, but let's call it F. So if you have a Dirac observable, this means that it's gauge invariant. So what do you want? Yeah, so it was going to commute with all constraints. So here we have only one. And so usually we say that it's weakly commute with, okay? So this means that you get, so the Poisson bracket weakly vanish. This means that it vanish on the constraint surface, okay? So here I mean weakly. And this means that it's on the constraint surface. And so this object, so the Dirac observable are very important objects when you want to quantize constrained system, okay? Because yeah, usually it's what you want really to quantize because they do not carry any gauge information and it's only the physical information. So when we are going to, when we want to quantize, the idea would be to quantize only the gauge invariant object. But we will see, indeed for this, usually you need to know what is your physical phase space, and it's not going to be always the case. So this issue of defining Dirac observable is not so simple. So let's see what is the general construction. So construction of physical observable. And so I'm going to do that in the specific case of this parameterized particle, which is very simple because we have only one constraint. And in addition, we will see that we can find a good gauge fixing, which is not always the case. So let's see what is a good gauge fixing. So if you want more detail, let's have a look to the, Bianca is really writing a big, long paragraph about this notion of physical observable, and also there is an interesting discussion between what we call a complete observable and a partial observable in Carlo's book. Okay, so I'm going. So when I'm talking about physical observable or Dirac observable, I'm talking what Carlo called complete observable. Okay. But his point is that in fact, so in gravity, even classically, we don't know what are the physical, the Dirac observable, but in fact, we are dealing with observable which are gauge dependent. And so Carlo is arguing to explain why this works, okay? Because all the measurements we are doing in astrophysics or cosmology are using gauge dependent object, okay? And it seems that it works, so he's explaining why he thinks things are working, okay? So there is a nice chapter about that in Carlo Rovelli's, yeah. So maybe Carlo, you don't know who is Carlo, it's Carlo Rovelli, okay? But he's becoming quite famous, especially now that he, I don't know if you know, but he wrote the last book, I think it's 7 lecture in physics or something like this. And it's a bestseller in Italy, but even in France, and he's getting quite famous just because of physics book, so it's quite surprising. But he was already known, of course, in the community of physicists, but now he's known from everyone, at least in Italy. Okay, so yeah, I advise you to have a look here. And so the idea to construct physical observable is, so to try to select as many gauge fixing as you have constraint. Okay, so if you remember, a constraint is going to give you a gauge flow, okay? And the idea of to gauge the fix is meaning that you are going to choose one particular point in each gauge here. Okay, so select. So here we have only one gauge fixing. Condition. Okay, add the constraint. Of course, then there are some conditions on this gauge fixing to to get what we call a good gauge fixing. But so I let you have a look to Bianca's note. It's going to be, in our case, since we have only one gauge, okay, when we have only one constraint, it's quite simple. We are just going to fix T at some fixed parameter. So where tau is a fixed parameter here. Okay. So this is our gauge here. And now, given a phase space function, okay, we want to define the associated physical phase space observable by associating so the value f of s for all points in the gauge to at the gauge fixing. So let's see. So we want to the value now of the physical observable. So I'm going to denote it f. So on a gauge orbit is just given by the value where the gauge orbit hold, okay, on that point. S of the gauge orbit on which you have that T of S is equal to tau. Okay, so what does it mean here in our case? So we know that we want to find two independent gauge variables, which are, so we choose from our phase space. So our phase space, now we have Q, T, P, T, P, Q. Okay, so we are going to first look at the gauge orbit of Q generated by C and the gauge orbit of P, Q generated by C. Okay, so let's have a look to this gauge orbit. So for we choose first the first phase space function, we just consider Q, okay? Because here we already know the result we want to get. Okay, we want to get that Q is and P are observable. So let's so then we can compute dQ over dS as the flow generated by C, okay? So I'm not going to redo the calculation. It's exactly the same with H, except that here you divide by N, okay? So for the for all our phase space variable, you have that the flow generated by the constraint is given by this same equation divided by N. So here we see that PQ indeed is going to be a constant. PT is also a constant. And here we get that Q dot dQ dot is given by this equation. And so this means that the gauge orbit of Q generated by C is given by this equation, okay? Q of S is Q, where here we have some initial condition. Let S minus, I don't know, T zero. Okay, so here it's the gauge orbit of Q generated by C, and now we want, so the physical observable is given by the value of this gauge at the point where TS is equal to tau here. Okay, so here we just get, and from this equation we get that the flow, we get that dT over dS, which is TC, is equal to 1, okay, so you get that TS is equal to S plus some initial condition, but so when the gauge holds, okay, you get that TS is just tau. So here we get that Q of tau, which is our observable is just given by, and I denote it like this, so it's f of tau q, okay, is exactly given by the value on the gauge orbit when s is equal to, when the gauge holds, okay, so we get here that it's q okay, so it's just the physical observable is just given by the value of q at the point of the gauge orbit where t takes the value s, okay? Takes the value tau, sorry. And so now you can have a look to the same for the variable f is equal to p q, okay? And you just get that f of q PQ is equal to PQ. And indeed, you recover your 2 degrees of freedom, okay? So as here with the, so when we were unparametrized particle, okay, we just get that Q was observable, but you see that Q depends on 2 initial conditions. So Q and PQ, and here you recover the same thing, and you can look at the other observable associated so to T and PT, okay? And you will just see that, so here you just get that F of T is just going by, it's just a constant, okay? On the phase space, and F of PT, you can show that F of PT can be written in terms of F of PQ, okay? So you really have, can be written as, okay, so here you really have only 2 independent variables. And you can check that here, considering these 2 observable, you recover the symplectic structure of our initial phase space. So the when you had only Q and PQ, okay, and here you recover that. And so this just shows you that if you look at the physical observable, okay, or if you want the Dirac observable, then you can really recover the here the unparametrized particle, okay, so the physical degrees of freedom. So the idea is when you have something like this, the main point is to, if you have the physical observable, then you understand what this means at physical time evolution, okay? So here the physical time evolution can be recovered, but it's also because we have what we call the perfect clock observable. And this cannot, but so the issue is why this is difficult. So first, it's difficult because, so the main point is to find globally good gauge fixing, okay? So what does it mean to have good gauge fixing condition? This is quite difficult to find, especially when you want to have a kind of clock. To find a good clock which always go forward, this is not obvious. And even in this system, so you see that here we know what we wanted to get. So here I've chosen the gauge to say, okay, I'm going to gauge fix t is equal to tau, but you could also choose a gauge on the q variable, okay, for example. And if you try to do that on the q variable, you will see that it's a complete mess to try to have an interpretation, okay, in time of time in particular in terms of time evolution. So here we know what we wanted to get, so we have chosen a good gauge fixing. But just in this simple system, if you try to fix the gauge on the variable q, you will already get something quite complicated. And also here, why here it works well? It's because so the conjugated momenta. Associated to momentum associated to T here, so PT appears only linearly in the constraint, okay? And this is why things work nicely. But you know that in relativistic physics, so in particular in GR, but even in the simple system of the relativistic particle, then constraints are going to be quadratic in all the momenta. Okay, and so this explains why it's so difficult to quantize, and also, but it also reflects the fact that time and the space coordinates, okay, time and space are on the same footing because you don't have this. Whereas here we see that they are not equal, okay? You have pt linearly and pq as a square function. And so in the case of relativistic system, we don't have this anymore. And so this is why it's so difficult to go to the, to get observable. Okay, so this is just what I wanted to say about observable, and now I want to introduce the Dirac quantization program. So for this system, of course, you could go back to the, you could do the what we call the reduced phase space quantization, okay? Because here, you could just go back to the unparametrized particle case, okay? Because it's, we have just seen that fixing the gauge and everything, going to the physical degrees of freedom, it's like going back to the unparametrized particle case. Then you could do that and just do the standard Schrödinger quantization, okay? But we're not going to do that here because, of course, you must, in most of cases we're going to be interested, we don't have access to this reduced phase space. So that's why we want to go to the Dirac quantization. So what is the Dirac program here? The Dirac program so the first step is going to be to get to find a representation. So I'm going to write precisely what are the steps, and then we're going to do that on the on this specific case. So find a representation of your phase space variable as operator, okay? Of, and here we are talking about the kinematical phase space, okay? Phase space variables. So as operator. And so this means we want to define a kinematical Hilbert space, okay? Satisfying the standard commutation relation, meaning that, so, where here we just did this the Poisson bracket just become, so we have a H, so it's minus, I think in this order, Okay, then the next step, so we have, so here it's going to be for, in our case of the unparametrized parametrized particle, so we have Q, T, PQ, PT, okay, as phase-based variables, but then we have constraint. So then we need to promote this constraint to self-adjoint operator, okay? Promote the constraint to, well, when this is possible, let's say. Then, of course, it's to characterize the space of solution and define an inner product, okay, associated with that. So, we want to characterize, so this is what we're going to do in this case of unparametrized particle, and then we are going to see what we can do in the case of gravity. So in 3D, everything works well, but then in 4D, we are going to see where we get stuck. Phase of solution. But already in the case of the parametrized particle, we are going to see what is going to be the tricky point, okay? Because at some point, we are in fact going to use the fact that we know the solution coming from the unparametrized particle and use it to define, in particular here, our physical Hilbert space. So characterize the space of solution of the constraint and define the corresponding inner product, okay? So inner product, and we're going to see that this step is usually quite hard. So then this is going to define the so-called physical Hilbert space, so H physical, okay? And then, of course, the next step, so I don't think we're going to have time to talk about that, but in the case of the unparametrized, the parametrized particle, we just recover the usual observable from find a complete set of gauge invariant observable. And invariant, and these observables are going to represent, of course, the questions that can be addressed in the in this kind of generally covariant quantum theory. Okay, so these are the different steps, and so now we are going to apply this to the case of the parametrized particle. I'm going to keep this one. Okay. Okay, so the first step is to find a representation of the phase space variable as operators. So here we start with our kinematical phase space. Okay, so we have phase space, so which is defined by Q T P Q P T. Okay, so it's four dimensional.
Just a general question: was this direct program developed in the context of quantum gravity or?
Yeah, because it's for generally covariant system. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for constraint system, yeah.
Well, actually developed by Dirac.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, even I think, yeah, if you want to have a look at there is a small book by Dirac where everything is really nicely explained already at this. At the time of Dirac, he already explained everything very clearly.
Six of them in the library. So.
Ah, okay, yeah. Good. So you don't have any excuse. You should have a look at this. Even if you don't read it, just have a look to see how it was explained at this time. Yeah. Okay. So we first define a kind of the kinematical Hilbert space, and here we are just going to define take as a Hilbert space the square integrable function on R2, okay? And so explicitly, we're going to use wave function of Q and T and define the inner product. But first, let's have a look to the phase as operator. What do we mean as operator? So Q and T here are considered as a configuration variable. And they are going to act, so we are going to use the usual representation, and they act as multiplication operator, okay? So here we consider that Q is going to give an operator Q dot, and his action, an operator Q hat, sorry. And Q, the action of this operator on the wave function is just by multiplication, Okay, and t is also our configuration variable, and so we also consider that this operator now is going to act by multiplication. Okay, so here we have configuration operator act by multiplication. And indeed, so if you remember the Poisson bracket between two different Q and two different T are equal to zero, and the multiplication is also a commutative thing. Okay, so this for the configuration variable. And now let's have a look to the momentum variable, so the momentum operator. So if you remember what is the Poisson bracket between Q and PQ, okay? So what is your guess for the operator PQ and PT here? What do you expect? How are they going to act? Very good, okay. And then you can check that indeed you have this relation between Poisson bracket and commutator. And so we need to add at some point a minus I and a H bar to get that this is going to be the derivative with respect to Q, and this one is going to act as the derivative with respect to T. Okay, so we have that momentum operator act by differentiation. Okay, so this is just, we can just define the inner product as so dq dt of, let's call qt okay, so this define what we call the kinematical inner product. Sorry.
Is it important that we say we're on L2 because I mean we have to define this inner product in a well-defined way, right?
Yeah.
So, but L2 is kind of in contradiction with the free particle, right?
Yeah, so it's what we're going to see right now. This is really important. It's a kinematical Hilbert space, and you're really right that it's not the physical. And we're going to see that, indeed, if we keep this, so you already have the point. If we keep this inner product here, then you will see that when we solve the constraint, we're going to integrate over dt, and this means that we're going to integrate over gauge orbit of length infinity, and so that's why we're going to get infinity, and so that's why here the point is really also defines what we call inner product. Here is a physical inner product, which are not going to be this one, and you're really right that. But so you see that here, we already know the result, so that's why you already know that we are just not at the physical level at all, but really at the kinematical level, and that we are going to need to change this inner product. Yeah, very good point. And in fact, here we are going the result for the physical inner product is going to be quite simple to get, also because, as you said, you know the free particle, you know what is the expecting result. So meaning that we know the result from the reduced phase space quantization, in fact, more or less. Okay, so this was the first point of the Dirac program. Then the second point, let's do point by point, is to promote the constraint to an operator. So here, C was equal to PT plus PQ squared And there is no really difficulties just to using the fact that now we promote this variable as operator to write it as C is equal to minus plus minus h bar squared 2m Okay, so I'm not sure you can see very well. And so you should recognize what is, so now the constraint equation is just given by C acting. And so you should recognize what is this equation here. Yeah, so it's just the Schrödinger. Equation. So you see that really now your evolution equation appears as a constraint here. Okay. Okay. So then let's go to the notion of physical. So I'm going to maybe keep. Yeah. Let's go there and keep the program. Up. Okay, so I'm going to conclude on this. So here, if you now look at the standard Schrödinger representation, you will get that your physical solution are just given by Q and T can be written as here, the H bar is just this kinematical part here, okay? PQ, but now, so if you look at this kind of function, and so this is what we're going to call the physical, but if you use now the kinematical inner product, indeed, you will get that. So look at the inner product between to that function, then what you're going to get is just yeah, so maybe I can directly simplify, and you're going to get that it's you need to integrate of Q dQ. So this is a number, and you integrate over dt, so these are constant along the gauge orbit and which have infinite dimensions. So here you get infinity, okay? And it's, yeah, this is always going to happen if you, when you are dealing with gauge orbit which are non-compact, okay? And so here the problem is that the kinematical inner product, okay, includes integration over the gauge degrees of freedom. So that's why we have to choose a physical inner product, okay? So this is not, so this is the kinematical inner product, and this is not what we want. We want to choose here a physical, we need to choose a physical inner product in order not to integrate over the gauge dimension. Yeah,
one minute. Could you define what H hat is?
Sorry?
What's H hat?
Yeah, okay, so h hat is just what I'm calling h hat come from just the unparameterized particle, and that you can recover here, it's just the pq okay. And so this is really the crucial step in the Dirac in the Dirac quantization, okay? It's to find the physical inner product on the space of solution. And this is really what is the tricky point, okay? So this is really the crucial step in Dirac quantization, okay? To find finally the size of the physical inner Hilbert space, sorry. Okay. quantization. And so there are several methods to get the, to find the physical inner product. So you could look at the path integral method, the master constraint quantization, the group averaging. We're going to talk about this for the SU2 gauge symmetry of gravity. Okay, so we're going to deal with this. But here, in the case of the parameterized particle, we can just borrow what we know, the inner product from the reduced phase space quantization. Okay, and so here, we're going just from the, because in this case, so for this simple system, it's nice because the two quantizations are equivalent. So here, we can just borrow the inner product from the phase space quantization, reduced phase space quantization, and in fact, it's just that we're going just to integrate over R, and here T is going to be as a fixed parameter. Okay, T fixed R for Q. And yeah, here we get that in this simple system, so the two quantizations, the reduced phase space quantization and the Dirac quantization are equivalent. But you see that the really tricky point is to find the physical inner product. And so just to conclude the last point of the, so the last point was to find the complete set of gauge invariants observable, okay? And here, in fact, we can just show that you are going to recover the position and the momentum as in the standard quantum, as in standard quantum mechanics, okay? So I'm not going to spend too much time. And so tomorrow we are going to start to see what are the steps, the different step by step we're going to apply this program to the gravity case, okay? So I'm going to conclude here for today, and thanks for your attention.